Our next presenter is Julia Painter, again presenting on the work of a large group of collaborators there at the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Health Education at Emory University. Julia Painter is a postdoc at Emory in the vaccinology training program. She graduated with a BA in biology and society from Cornell University, but this is all who you are, and a Master of Public Health and PhD degree from Johns Hopkins University. In between her undergraduate and MPH programs, she was a high school science teacher via Teach for America. Oh, her current research interests are adolescents and school health, infectious disease prevention among adolescents, and the link between health disparities and academic achievement. So share with us your work, current work now.
Hi, how are you guys all doing?
Good.
Hi. So I'm presenting on behalf of a large group, as Dr. Barrick said, and Lisa Gargano is another author on this paper. She's right there. Paper. Oh my gosh. All right, more sleep next time. So I'm presenting on the correlates of willingness to accept a school-based vaccination and also intention to get your child an influenza vaccine among parents of adolescents in rural Georgia. I have no relationships to disclose. So why do we care about influenza? Well, influenza ranks in the top 10 leading causes of death combined with pneumonia in the U.S. And while the mortality rates from influenza are highest among the elderly and infants, it's school-aged children who are the primary spreaders. And so we know that vaccination is the most effective method for preventing the spread of influenza vaccination. So the thought is that if you can vaccinate and prevent disease spread among school-aged children, you can directly prevent the children from getting influenza and indirectly protect the most vulnerable community members. So this is the ACIP's recommended immunization schedule, and you can see that influenza is recommended every year. And so whereas it's challenging to get people in for most of the recommended vaccines once or for a 2 or 3 dose series, getting people in every year is a particular challenge and unique to this vaccine, which is why it's really important to understand the best way to do that. And why schools? Well, school-based vaccination may be a highly effective way to vaccinate school-aged children. We know that adolescents are a lot less likely to go get routine child care or routine health care from their doctors than younger children. It may be particularly important for low-income rural and minority youth who are less likely to get vaccines in general. So adolescence is a unique age. Adolescence is characterized by, you know, development of social and emotional maturity, also developmental of autonomy. And adolescents are more likely to take control of their health-related attitudes and behaviors. And adolescents and parents may differ in their vaccine-related beliefs. And so it's important to know about how adolescents feel and adolescents think about getting vaccines, but it's also important to know about their parents. As we heard earlier today, one big concern with males getting the HPV vaccine is their parents, and so it's important to get both parents and adolescents on board. Especially with a school-based vaccine, you know, an adolescent may decide that they want the vaccine, but unless the parent signs a consent form, they can't get it. And many previous studies have focused on parental attitudes towards vaccines for children under age 12. We're starting to see more papers about parental acceptance of HPV vaccine for adolescents, but there's not all that much about parental acceptance for flu vaccine. So this data that I'm presenting today was part of a much larger non-randomized control trial of a school-based influenza vaccine intervention. You can see that there were three. I'm really sorry. Can I drink some more? Thank you. Thank you. You can see that there are three arms to this trial. On the right, you see a control county, which got absolutely no intervention. And then you see counties 1 and county 2. Both of those counties got an educational intervention, which was a school-based skit that we did. We actually had students from the school engage in skits, and we also developed a brochure in conjunction with parents and administrators from the community and students to go home to the families. So the parents got the brochures, and the students saw the skits and discussed that with their parents. And then in the school-based vaccine county, we actually provided the vaccine in the school site in the school-based clinic. And in the provider-based county, we provided students and parents in the schools with vaccine vouchers to get the vaccine for free from their physicians and stocked the physician's office with vaccine. The data I'm presenting today is baseline data from the survey among parents in the community. So before we did any intervention, we surveyed the parents in all three counties to assess their willingness to accept a school-based vaccine and intention to vaccinate their child against influenza. And this is only done among parents of middle and high schools. So participants in sampling, we were with very, very, very rural counties, very sparsely populated counties in rural Georgia. There was only one middle school and one high school per county. And you can see that the sample sizes of the counties varied. In our school-based county, there was a little less than 400 students, going up to 700 in our, about 700 in our provider-based county, and then close to 900 in the control county. The eligibility criteria for participating in the survey was parents had to have a child enrolled in one of the schools we were working with, and they had to provide written informed consent to participate in the study. And these are just some maps to show you where we were working. You can see on the first map on the left, the star on the left is Atlanta, and the star on the right is Richmond, which is Augusta, and that's the county that we were working in. So methods for data collection. So we did a baseline phone survey of parents before we did any intervention in any county. And so we mailed study materials and consent forms directly home to the parents. The parents had to sign the consent forms to participate in the phone survey and also the forms for their children to get the vaccine at school if that was relevant or if they wanted it. The students had to turn in the forms to the schools, and we had a $10 gift card to Walmart for the students bringing in the forms, and then we mailed a $10 gift card to Walmart home to parents after they completed the survey. The surveys were done by phone interview, so the parents had to sign the consent form and in the form provide us with contact information in terms of a phone number and a backup phone number and a time of day when we could reach them so that we could call them, and then as soon as they completed it, we mailed the survey home to them. So what were we measuring in this study? We wanted to look at whether or not parents plan to vaccinate their child against influenza next fall or winter, and also whether or not they would allow their child to be vaccinated at school. We also asked about the child's demographics, age, race, and gender, medical history, whether they believe they heard or, God bless you, whether a doctor had recommended flu vaccine in the past, and whether or not their child had received a flu vaccine in the past. We also asked about some psychosocial variables guided by the health belief model. We asked about perceived susceptibility to the flu, perceived severity of the flu, perceived benefits to getting the vaccine, flu vaccine-specific barriers, for example, if the flu vaccine causes the flu, general vaccine barriers, and social norms. And I'm sorry, this slide has a lot of information on it, but these are the items that we use to assess each measure. And each item was true or false, and so to assess the measures, we added up whether or not people said, you know, true or false in the appropriate direction for each psychosocial construct. For our analysis, again, this was a cross-sectional analysis with the baseline data. We looked at descriptive information and then did bivariate and then multivariate logistic regression analysis. And then, again, we had two outcomes, intention to vaccinate against influenza and willingness to accept a school-based vaccination. All these pictures that you see, by the way, were taken with students and parents at the actual schools we were working with. and so they were all very fun and collaborative. So descriptive results. About 86% of the people completing the surveys were mothers of students. 57% intended to vaccinate their children next fall or winter. 83, a high percent, said that they would accept school-based vaccination, which is promising. Only 30% had said they'd ever vaccinated a child against influenza in the past. For the child demographics, about 52% were in high school, mean age of 14.48, so we had pretty much good variability in age of the students. Slightly over half, 61% were black, 53% of students were female, and 16% had a past medical history of asthma. So looking at bivariate results, if you just look at differences for intention to vaccinate, you can see that there were significant differences on a lot of variables for intention to vaccinate. And so if you look, having a child in high school, having a child who is African American, black, receiving Medicaid as opposed to private insurance, having being vaccinated in the past, having a doctor recommendation in the past, were all factors that were associated with intention to receive a vaccine. In terms of the psychosocial variables, we saw that perceived susceptibility to your child getting the flu and having flu vaccine-specific barriers and high social norms were significantly associated with intention to get the flu vaccine. When we did a multivariate analysis and we put all the variables that were significant at the bivariate level into the multivariate model, we saw that three variables remained significant predictors of intention to receive a flu vaccine or to vaccinate your child, including past vaccination, having gotten the vaccine for your child in the past, getting a doctor recommendation, and social norms. In terms of when we looked at school acceptance as our outcome, willingness to accept a school-based vaccine, we saw that there were only significant differences between groups for three variables at the p equals less than 0.05 level. I left the p equals 0.07 in there for the more complex analyses because some people will tell you if it's less than 0.1 to keep it in until the end. So being African American was significantly associated with lower acceptance or not being willing to accept a school-based vaccine. Also, not having a doctor recommendation and perceiving higher flu vaccine barriers and general vaccine barriers were associated with lower acceptance for school-based vaccination. And when those were put into a multivariate model, what you see is being African American, people who reported black race, higher flu vaccine barriers and higher general vaccine barriers were all significantly less likely to say that they were willing to accept a school-based vaccine for their child. So what does that mean? Well, in terms of intention to vaccinate, regardless of location, we see that, doctor recommendation, past recommendation, and social norms are really important. And so even when controlling for all the other variables. So this shows us that support for influenza vaccination from the medical community and social community can be highly influential in getting people on board, especially in situations where people really trust their providers. In terms of acceptance of school-based vaccination, being African American was associated with lower vaccine acceptance, and having flu-specific vaccine barriers and general vaccine barriers were significantly associated with lower acceptance. So what that shows us is that, well, first of all, future research should investigate potentially racial differences in acceptance for school-based vaccines, especially since school-based vaccination could be particularly important in low-income and minority populations. It seems there may be more barriers there, too, so that's something that needs to be investigated. And also, we can see that it's really important to address both influenza-specific vaccine barriers and general vaccine barriers. among this population where people might be distrustful of the vaccine. Limitations of the study, it was cross-sectional. It was self-report, so there might have been some social desirability bias for people to say that they were on board with the vaccine. The population was low SES and rural, which may not be generalizable to other populations. There could be some unmeasured factors, for example, personality traits, which may influence vaccine acceptance, school-based acceptance. This baseline study was conducted prior to the H1N1 pandemic, which actually occurred within the few years of our study, so attitudes may have changed and be different now. If we were to repeat this phone survey post H1N1, we may find differences in acceptance or intention to vaccinate. So overall, what can we conclude? Well, social norms, vaccine barriers, medical recommendations may be really important to address when you're trying to increase influenza vaccination rates among middle and high school age students. Vaccine uptake or school vaccine acceptance may vary by race, and so that's something that's worth looking into, especially if you have a mixed population, to make sure that everybody gets the vaccine who needs it. And there were different correlates of intention to vaccinate children against the flu and also willingness to accept a school-based vaccine. And so it's probably worth looking more into why those things were different and what might make parents more interested in accepting a school-based vaccine. Now, I will say we did some qualitative work after this, and we talked to parents, and one thing that they said was, well, you know, just sending us something in the mail and, you know, from memory, and we don't know who you are. Maybe if you had actually, you know, sat down or showed us your face or talked to us, we might be more willing to accept it, which could account for some of the distrust with a school-based vaccine compared to a provider who parents know well and trust. So future directions for research, well, future interventions targeting rural and middle high school students may benefit from addressing the adolescents' attitudes and the parents' attitudes. I think it really is important to do a combined effort to increase acceptance for a flu vaccination. It's really important to address common myths. For example, the flu vaccine causes you to get the flu, which is a very, very common myth. Future research should also be larger scale than what we did. You know, we were in three small counties. There needs to be more done, and also longitudinal studies assessing school-based influenza vaccination. And also, it's really important to have social and behavioral research in conjunction with vaccine interventions. If we hadn't done any surveys of attitudes, beliefs, behaviors, and just measured vaccine outcomes, you know, you never necessarily know why vaccine rates are the way they are and what you can do to increase vaccinations in the future. I would like to acknowledge the study team who worked with me on this, all the study participants and school staff who are wonderful to work with, and two grants that supported this project. Thank you.
Thank you all presenters, and I would like to invite comment, questions, some discussion. I think this is really very impressive work that you are doing, and one of the example. Yes, please join us here. Yes, yes. One of the typical examples of the primary prevention, and this is what I think is really very important in health promotion and in public health in general. So, any comments? Yes?
I'd like to thank all of you. I think it's really very interesting to see that there is almost like a trend in a lot of the vaccination in terms of social perception and culture. But my question really is for you, Dr. McCoy. Towards the end of your presentation, you said that the woman on the street, you know, you didn't get a voice in. Mm-hmm. And since Nova does a lot of research, I was wondering, was it that you don't have a method of getting this sort of voice to the table, or did your clients in this case resist you employing those methods?
I think we're
just repeat the question.
Okay,
sorry.
So the question was, how do we get the key influencer from the street, the person who's not involved in the influential organization? And we're sort of in the process now of trying to figure out how to go about doing that. See, NIVRI is actually a very large-scale program. We're involved, I believe, in 12 different communities across the country. So the question is if you're not local in the community, here I'm sitting in Bethesda, Maryland, How do I get somebody, the key influencer from the street, you know, somebody in San Francisco, for example. So there are many different people who've done different things. There are some snowball interviews techniques that have been used to try to identify, you know, who are the people in the communities that people are listening to. And really, my impression is that there's a difficulty in the process here. So we know that African Americans, for example, tend to listen to their ministers, and actually their folks, I guess, barbershops was showing up on one survey, key influencers in barbershops, and in gay bars is a very key place where people exchange information in the gay community. But we tried sending surveys to our barbershop people and our gay bar people, and they didn't return the surveys. And I don't know whether it's because it says National Institute of Health on there. That scares them maybe. They weren't real interested in getting on the computer and replying to our online survey. So we didn't have too many of these lay people in our survey because they were difficult to identify. They were identified by the partners, but it seemed like it was difficult for us to get information from them. Now, could we have gotten information from our community partners? Maybe, but we're trying to create an evaluation separate from them. So we're still working on this problem. That's an excellent question. You put your finger right on the issue.